There we are. This is Jo talking about her experiences before she moved to Burwell.
Okay. I lived in... As a child, I lived in Wandsworth, on the what was known then as the East Hill Estate. It was more, about 13 blocks of council flats. And when I was 13, we moved, and we moved to Clapham, to an estate called Poynders Gardens. In September 1940, we were hit by a bomb. We were in the shelter, and we were... Our house was blasted. There was no... Couldn't live there. So they directed us to go to a school in Alderbrook Road. Well, what happened that night? Alderbrook Road got bombed, but we luckily had gone down Clapham South Underground Station, and that's where we used to go. We used to wander about in the daytime, because there wasn't daylight bombing. It used to start as soon as it got dark.
Was there no school during the day?
Pardon?
Was there no school
no,
during the
no
day?
No, there was no school. And my mother... I'd already been evacuated. I'd been evacuated to Bognor Regis. But the woman who took us in took nine children. Nine of us. And I was 13, and there were two other girls who were 13. And she took a mother and her two children. And there were about three or four other children. It was a big house. She'd used it as a boarding house prior to us all turning up. And people said, well, why did you go there? And I said, well, would you take in three 13-year-olds? Especially three 13-year-old girls. Mm. Well, I stayed there for about 6 weeks. And that was in September. I got there on September the 1st, 1939, and my dad decided that why was I in Bognor Regis when France was only across the Channel? If anything was going to happen, that town would get set upon. So back I came to London.
Did you like it there? What?
No,
you didn't like it.
Back I came to London, and that's when the bomb dropped in September 1940. And that's when we ended up on Clapham South Underground.
What was it like in the underground?
Dreadful.
Did people sing?
No.
No.
I used to go down there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to get a place, and I used to sit on the platform, and there was a line drawn, and you weren't allowed to move your blankets or what have you past that line on the front because of people getting off the train. People weren't all that sympathetic. You used to say, oh, there you are, you ought to go home and things, what you're doing down here, but there.
Really?
Mm. And then my dad decided that this was no place I would evacuate again. And I went to Cornwall. I went to St Austell. And I lived with a Mr and Mrs Bennett and their son Jim. And I lived there. And then I came back to London. The war hadn't ended. I came back in 1942. My mother decided I should be a dressmaker because I had a sister who was a dressmaker, and she thought that I would be good at it. So I was farmed out to this woman, Mrs. Hurl at 5 shillings a week to dressmake. But in those days, Ernest Bevin decided, he was an MP, that women over the age of 18 should do war work if they were single. But in the meantime, my mother met a neighbour who said, oh, my daughter's got a job. Oh, wonderful job. She's become a GPO telephonist. And my mum said, oh, my Jo would love that job. Little did she know. And so Jo became a telephonist. And I worked at what was known as PBX Control. And I worked at Golden Cross House, that was at the end of the Strand. I worked at the War Office. And while I was there at the War Office, one of the girls had an American boyfriend, and he said about how much, she said she was broke, and he said, well, you're getting good pay. And when she told him, he said, well, they want telephonists at Itauza, which the Europe was known as the European Theatre of United States Army, ETUSA, that was right. And so along we all went. We got half a crown an hour, and it was down in the bowels of the earth, in what, whether it was something to do with Selfridges.
So it's underneath Selfridges somewhere.
No, it wasn't underneath Selfridges building. It was in a building next at the back of Selfridges. There was a little road, and then there was the, it was 14 Duke Street. I always remember the number. And the telephone number was Regent 8484.
You've got a good memory.
And there I worked until 1946, when the last of them, last of the American went back. Luckily for me, that build, the actual street, Duke Street, got bombed. It got a rocket, I think. I think it was a rocket. When we all turned up next day for work, there were lights flashing all over the switchboards, and you didn't know who wanted a call or what. In those days, I had slept underground. I went to work by underground.
And you worked underground?
And I worked underground. The only daylight I saw was coming from Bond Street Underground Station to Selfridges. To this building where we went down flights and flights of stairs to this actual building, to this actual, where the switchboards were. And then in May 1945, when the war ended and the Americans more or less were packing up, because the war was still on in Japan, in the Pacific, I became a radio operator, and you took off the, from the machines, the ticker tape machines, and wound them around your hand, and then they went through to the coding room. It was all very secretive. You had to swear allegiance to the American flag, and...
Was this in the same building?
Yes, it was in the same building. In the same building, down in the bowels of the earth. And then about... when was it? July 1946. That's when I left there. Yeah, so that was my contribution to war work.
Where did you go then?
Where did I go from there? Oh, I got a job in Eastbourne, in the Grand Hotel. And I became a receptionist and telephonist at the Grand Hotel in Eastbourne.
That was a change then, to go to the seaside.
I left home and went down to Eastbourne. I worked there for 14 months and decided hotel life wasn't for me. I didn't like it. The food was dreadful.
Oh dear.
In those days they were cooking whale meat.
Really?
And so I came back to London. So, and where did I go from there? Oh, I went and worked at Marks and Spencer's. Yes, I worked at Marks and Spencer's at their head office at 82 Baker Street. And I worked there for about 2.5 years. And I thought, oh no, I'm fed up with being a telephonist. I'll see what else I can do. And I went into advertising. I worked in an advertising agency, and it was where they used to have all the adverts for Clark shoes, British nylon, Sanderson's fabrics. And if they had models come in, we used to have to, and there were dresses that they would be photographed in
to help
dress them, big safety pins went in the back of the make sure that they fitted. But
just going back to the war years, you were telling me about the parachute silk.
Yes, when about 1945, on the market came these parachutes. I don't know where I got one from. My sister, being a dressmaker, she made for me and for my other sister cami knickers out of
parachute
silk. And also bras.
Really?
Because in those days there was a brand of bras called Kestos, and they were like two handkerchiefs made into like a, what would you call it, a triangle. An elastic was put on them, and you put buttons under the, they look like handkerchiefs, and of course I wasn't very...
Not very comfortable.
I wasn't very busty, and that was what you wore, and made the straps out of the parachute silk as well. Yeah, they were good.
So how did you manage with clothes? There was no clothes to buy much.
Well, you were on coupons. And...
were there any shops that you could buy?
Oh, yes, you had coupons. You got so many coupons in a ration book.
And you saved them up, I suppose.
And you saved them. And we had... as I say, I was lucky because these were two much older sisters than me, and they had all these stockings that they'd worn and then, you know, wore them twice and threw them in a bag. And we had this big bag full of stockings, so I always had stockings.
Oh, right, yes.
But clothes, yes. I've got a photograph of myself, and it was the collar had been a beach top, and the top was a bolero, and that was sewn up, and the skirt was about a four-gourd skirt, and that was attached. That was in navy blue.
It was make do and mend, wasn't it?
Definitely.
Yes, that's what they said.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And there was one shop that was in Brixton. You could go there and they would sell you, I suppose it was black market, a dress, but the price was exorbitant.
Yeah.
And you didn't need coupons.
Yeah, so it was a bit...
Yes, a bit under the counter.
Right, yes. Yes. I suppose you could get hold of anything for the right money,
if you had the right money, you could get anything.
So, was food was a bit basic then, was it? You just had your rations?
Yes, my mum was a wonderful cook and could virtually make something out of nothing.
You had to, yeah.
And she used to queue for extra bits. Fish wasn't rationed. And I used to say, where's Mum? Oh, she's out down at Blunt's in the fish queue. And I don't know how they fished, but we always had fresh fish.
Mm.
And then, of course, on every butcher's shop, it said, no offal. The animals didn't have offal. Were born with no offal in those days. They were.
But the offal must have gone somewhere else, mustn't it?
They used to say the armies got them.
Well, yes, that was what liver and kidneys
and that.
That sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, but they used to be able to get tripe. They should be a shop that was called the Tripe Dressers. And my mum used to go there and get tripe, and she cooked tripe and onions.
Did she make it taste nice? Oh, was it? Was it? It was good, yeah. Yeah.
It was like eating flannel, but you thought it was lovely.
Yes, well.
Lovely.
Yeah. And of course, there'd be no sweets or chocolate much, would
there? No. No.
You didn't get anything from the Americans, though?
No.
Gum chum?
No. We used to go to a dance. They used to hold dances, and it was at Victoria Coach Station, up above on Victoria Coach Station. And they used to, in the interval, or that, they used to have chocolate cake. I think we went more for the chocolate cake than we did for the dancing.
Well, yeah. And were there lots of nice young men in uniform?
Oh, yeah, they were, they were all there, but no. I knew a few, and I went out with a couple of them, but I didn't become a GI bride.
No.
No.
Just as well.
Lots of the girls married. Three or four of the girls that I worked with married Americans and went out to America.
Yeah.
I don't know what. I think they thought they were going to Hollywood, or it would be like Hollywood.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. But,
I think a few of them were disappointed when they got there.
Oh dear, yes.
Yeah, a couple came back. Yes.
Yeah. So did you, was it good companionship? Did you sort of pull together during the war?
Yes, oh yes.
And in your street where you lived, did you know everybody?
Or? Oh yes, yes.
Yeah, so you helped each other, I expect. Yeah.
Well, in one instance, my mum was she wasn't angry, she was just miffed, I suppose the word used now. She had a tin of plums. Of course, everything used to be saved for when somebody came home on leave.
Mm-hmm.
They would produce something, a tin of peaches or my mum had this tin of plums. It'd been in the cupboard for yonks. And a neighbour came and she said, about her son coming home on leave and she didn't have anything to give him. Oh, my mum said, I've got this tin of plums. Oh, she said, I'll give them back to you. I'll get you a tin and I'll give you. But she never did. My mum always said, and I gave Albie Gardner my tin of plums.
And you never got any?
No.
So what sort of food did you have to eat? Can you remember?
Lot of soup. My mum used to make lots of soup and put lots of vegetables.
Yes.
And if she could get a marrow bone.
Yes, yeah.
Then, she was beside herself. And of course, bread was a lot. It was, wasn't white, it was greyish.
Mm.
And she used to make bread pudding and things like that.
Yeah. And did she do puddings in cloths?
Oh, yes. Yes,
my mum did.
Spotted
yeah.
Dick.
Yeah.
And she, when she was getting them out of them, at the saucepan because they getting the tape off from round the, the spotted dick, and she used to make. And I don't know actually what she made them with, but they were there because I'm, you know, when she got suet, because I once asked for some suet at the butcher's, and he said, why don't you use packet suet? I said, oh, I didn't know much about packet suet. He said, do you know how to do that? If I get sell you a bit of suet, will you know what to do with it? I said, yes, you put it on a grater, and you grate it and keep dipping it in flour and put it on the grater. Oh, he said, here you are, you know what to do with
it. That's it then, you know,
yes.
I can remember you buy packets of them, and
well,
that
now
is
they sell that at Tora, don't they?
That's right, at Tora.
I don't know whether they sold it in those days, but my mum always used a lump
to
of
do
suet.
It yourself. And I remember my mother, she used to have a block of salt.
Yes, that's right.
And you used to have to use the rolling
salt,
pin.
Cut the salt.
Yeah.
And put it in the salt jar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was all hard work, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, you used to cut the salt with the knife. I can still hear the knife going through it.
Yeah.
That were, and making starch, you used to have this starch, and you used to have to first of all, start it off with cold water, then you put boiling water on it, and you stirred it.
Yeah.
And that, well, that was for the collars.
Oh, the men's collars.
For the men's collars. Yeah.
And were they detachable ones that took off?
Yes.
Yeah. So would they wear the same shirt
every day? They wear the same
day,
shirt, but a different collar every day.
A different clean collar, yes.
Yes. But...
So how did she do her washing? Did she have a wash house?
No, my mum had a copper.
She had a copper, yeah. That indoors then?
Yeah, that was indoors. That was in what was a bathroom. That was at the end of the bath, was this copper.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to, there was a pipe. She used to pull it down into the copper and it siphoned the water into the bath. The copper was religiously filled every Sunday for Monday.
Monday wash day, yes.
For wash day.
And how was that heated?
Oh, by everything you could get hold of.
You had to burn.
You had to
stroke it,
Old shoes, old... anything that was going.
Yeah.
Tarry blocks from when they were doing the roads, tar blocks.
And was she able to hang a washing outside? Was there a washing line?
Yes, there was washing lines.
Yeah. Was that, was it a street? Did you
no, it was in the grounds of the blocks of flats that we lived.
Right, so everybody had their own line,
yes. Well, they're really their own day of washing, and God help the kids if they went through and wiped their noses on my mum's sheets.
I bet. Was it white sheets?
White sheets, yes.
Yes, they had to be really white.
Oh,
they
were whiter than white.
Whiter than white, yes.
They were boiled, and you could, the smell of, come home on a Monday from school, it was cold meat and pickles.
I hated that.
And cold meat and pickles and bubble and squeak.
Yeah.
And you used to go round to a little shop and used to get a mustard pickle in a basin, 2 penny worth of piccalilli in a basin, and that was
with
the cold meat and pickles.
I hated Mondays.
There was this smell. Well, it went on all week because Monday was the washing, Tuesday was the drying. Wednesday it was the folding and the ironing, and of course my mum had a mangle, and she was considered posh because it was a tabletop mangle. She could let the ringer down and she could use it as a table.
Oh, it, mm.
it appeared my father bought it for her when I was born.
Mm.
So she was
did fortunate. You have brothers and sisters?
Well, I had these two older sisters, because mm-hmm. my mum had been a 1914 war widow.
Yes. Do you know anything about her husband during the
yes.
First World War?
Yes. He was wounded, and he came home, and my mum had a two-year-old, and he came back from the war, and no, he died, but he died in England.
Mm-hmm.
And my mum was 6 months pregnant with my middle sister. Mm-hmm. And he died on November the 10th, 1918. And my sister was born February the 11th.
So the day before the armistice?
The day before the armistice, he was wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister was born February the 11th, 1919.
Mm-hmm.
So my mum had a two-year-old or two-year-three-months-old, and a new baby. And my mum went to the pension people or somewhere, and she was informed that liability was assumed after death. So she didn't get anything from my second sister, who was born 3 months after her father died.
Mm.
Yeah.
So she then had a second husband?
Yes, she married again about 6 years later to my father. And
so she had to cope with those.
She had three jobs.
Mm.
My mum had three jobs, and my gran, who lived in the East End of London, sold up and came over to Battersea, where my mum lived, and moved in with my mum, so that while my mum was at work, my gran could look after the two mm-hmm. children.
Yes.
Yes. My mum, she worked for Mrs. Bruce, the sister-in-law of the Prime Minister of Australia, Mrs. Bruce, and her two children. And she also worked for Peter Scott's Scott of the Antarctic. She worked for his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And in the evening she worked at Henneke's in Lupus Street, Pimlico. She used to get home, so she used to tell me about 12 o'clock at night, and then she'd start work at Mrs. Bruce about 6:30 in the morning.
So Hennessy's, was that a bar?
That was a bar, yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, so she had a very full day then.
Yes.
Mm. And you were telling me about your grandmother had some stories about the East End.
Yes, my granny was born in Bethnal Green, and so was my mother. She was born in Bethnal Green. And were nothing like they think that East End is.
East End is on the television now,
yeah,
you mean?
Like that. They always say that they think and fought and yearn, but my mother didn't speak like that, neither did my grandmother.
No.
And my granny was one of 14 children. There was 14 of them, and my great-grandfather was a stevedore at St Catherine's Dock in London,
yes.
And my gran married a docker.
Mm-hmm.
He was a stevedore, but he died about 1910, and that's how my gran, being on her own, was able to sell up and come to Battersea to be with my mum.
Yes.
But she used to say that Battersea, that the over the London Bridge, if you came over the London Bridge, it was like going to another country.
Mm-hmm.
Because she'd always been used to the East End of London and came over London Bridge to live in Battersea. It was a completely
So did
different.
She talk about the East End?
Oh, yes, yes.
Can you remember any of the stories she used to say? Did you say about you thought Queen Victoria or a rich lady?
The story she used to say, tell us on a cold day, was, oh yes, when either Queen Victoria or somebody from gentry went through the East End and saw all the poor people shivering on the side of the road, oh poor souls, I must send them some blankets. Well, she got home to wherever it was she lived, and it was warm. Oh, she said, it's warm now. She said, they don't need those blankets. And they never got them.
They never got them.
Never got them. But the food that, although it was the Jewish quarter, and my mum's name was Rebecca Morris.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was Friday afternoon, my mum was always sent home early, because the Jews have Shabbos. But my mum wasn't a Jewess.
Mm.
And one little boy in the school stood up when my mum was about to go home on this Friday afternoon and said, she ain't a Jew, missus. And so my mum never got to go home anymore on a Friday afternoon. But she used to go with her brother, and they used to go to the houses where the Jews lived and douse the fire on a Friday afternoon. They didn't mm-hmm. touch the fires.
Really? That was a custom?
That was a custom mm-hmm. with the Jews, yes. Yeah. Yes, but my granny took in washing.
Oh, I see, yes.
On her census, which I've done, she's down as a washerwoman.
Is that 1911, would that be?
No, that was about the 1901. Or might have been the 1911, that she's down as a washerwoman.
Yes, yes.
And when I was at school, we used to go to laundry classes, and this afternoon I took a tea cloth, and the teacher told me how to wash this tea cloth. And I came home and I told my gran all what you had to do. Steep it, and then pour the corners and all this carry on. My gran said, you go back and tell that teacher your gran has washed more tea cloths than she could bring through the door.
Mm.
So you're not going to laundry classes anymore.
No.
So I never did. I learned how to wash a tea towel.
It's a good bit of time. Right, what else have we got to cover? Can you tell me when you met your husband then?
Oh, now that's a...
Whereabouts were you then?
Well, I married when I was 41.
Mm-hmm.
And I was friendly with a girl who became my sister-in-law, and she was married to a Canadian, and she came and stayed with us for about a week before she went to Canada, and she originated from Yorkshire, and she said, would you like to come to my brother's wedding? So off went Joe in June 1946 to Jimmy's wedding. Well, I saw John there but didn't take much notice of him. He had a twin brother who was thought he was a lady killer, and so I kept out of his way. I've been keeping out of his way ever since. And John had got leave from the army, and I spoke to him, and that was that. Well, in 1947, John left, came out of the army, and so did his twin brother, and they went to Canada to their sister.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John came over on holiday in about 1962, and she said, go and look up Joe, see where she is, because we'd always corresponded. She, by that time, had five children, and go and see her, she said. Or John, whether he dropped, did he drop me a letter or a telegram, I think, and asked me to ring this number, and I rang it, and it was him. He said, I'm coming down to London. I've got nowhere to stay. Can I stay at your house? I said, no, we've got room for him. Let's stay here. Well, I took him on a tour of London from the early morning, about 8 o'clock, till about 10 o'clock at night. I walked him off his feet. He went back to Canada and we wrote to one another. He said, why don't you come out here? You're in a comfortable rut in that job. And out to Canada I went.
Mm-hmm.
And there, from there, I lived with his sister and other people as I moved about. And we got married.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he's out there now.
Mm-hmm. And how many children have you got?
One.
You've got one daughter.
One daughter.
And what's her name?
Rebecca.
And she lives
in Burwell.
And that's why you came to live in Burwell.
When John had a slight stroke,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't able to drive anymore. And we lived in a bungalow in Ixworth, but it was a while away from the shops. Well, I couldn't leave him to go down to the shops. So my daughter said, when he was coming out of hospital, why don't you come over and be with us? So
what did you think of Burwell when you
Well,
first
I liked
moved
it
to?
Because they no. used to, they were doing up this house in Hythe Lane, and I liked it. I liked Burwell. It had everything here that I wanted, you know, a bank, a co-op, a doctor's, it was very self-contained, and I liked it, so over here we came.
Well, thank you very much, Jo. That's been fantastic. Thanks for speaking to me today.
Oh, that's gone back memories.
Yeah, so you're a bit dry now, aren't you?
Gone back memories.
Yeah.
And still I'm 80.